As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
The race is on, and the latest piece of the Formula One driver market puzzle has fallen into place, with AlphaTauri confirming Yuki Tsunoda will remain with the team in 2023. But should Red Bull have looked elsewhere, and who will be his teammate given Pierre Gasly's mooted Alpine move? I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to answer those questions and many more are Mark Hughes and Val Hurunji. Well, Mark, how are you doing? Enjoying this slightly extended gap before Singapore?
Yeah, it feels like luxury, doesn't it? Having two weekends in between races, but I think we're about to get, four races in the next five. So yeah, it'll be back to normal soon enough.
Exactly. Quick fire end to the season. And Val, this is your first appearance on the F1 podcast for a good while, but I hope your F1 chat is on good form.
No, I'm actually, I'm doing MotoGP this weekend, so I actually know nothing about four wheels. I don't know why you brought me in here.
Well, we like to have diversity of opinion and perspective. So yeah, we'll understand if you get a little bit confused about the number of wheels, but hopefully you should be on good form, and you are someone who keeps a good eye on young drivers as well. So I would say you're very well qualified. Well, as I said, Yuki Tsunoda has been confirmed at AlphaTauri. Not a great surprise, but another piece of the driver market puzzle. So, Mark, what's your assessment of Tsunoda's season so far? And do you think he's done enough to justify keeping this drive?
He's done just about enough to keep the drive. It would have been surprised if they hadn't renewed him. But I wouldn't say he's made it a no-brainer. I think if there was somebody red hot that was absolutely irresistible on the, that was in their reach, I think it would be looking a little bit iffy for him. He's been better than last year overall, but not really by as much as I was hoping. He's still a long way from the finished product. Overall, a bit closer to Gasly than he was before. He's around a tenth and a half off on average in qualifying. But just not as rounded, and his peaks haven't been exceptional. I still haven't really seen the driver that made such an impressive debut at Bahrain last year. AlphaTauri is not giving him a good car, and that car's inconsistency. It seems a very small window of balance between the understeer and oversteer on it, and it's made it inevitable that a lot of his qualifying laps are scrappy, and he just doesn't seem to have found a way of working within that. He's constantly either over or under that line, and he maybe needs a better understanding with his engineer or a better technical understanding, so he's not forever just frustrated that the car's not doing what he needs it to do. It's a mediocre car, yes, but he's not dealing with it that well. I'd say hopefully this will just turn out to be the sort of the hard yards type of year in which lessons will be learned and in time absorbed. But if he's just stalled at this level, that won't be enough to sustain his career long term. So 23, I'd say, is his last chance saloon, really. He has it within him to do it, but is it locked in or will it ultimately be accessible? And I'd say the jury's out on that.
I think for me, the big concession is, and obviously, as you say, we've not seen the driver who debuted so well at Bahrain, but we've also not seen the driver who took F2 effectively by storm the year prior and put himself in contention for that seat and secured that seat. And I think because of how high those peaks are, maybe we forget a little bit that this is not a driver with the most conventional junior career, not the longest junior career. He had, one full season in Japanese F4, then came to F3 for one season. Was it JP3 at that point? I don't remember. Then F2 in one season. So, it's 2 years on the European scene. It's three. No, two. 2 years on the European scene. It's just not a lot at all. And it's, when he comes to F1, I think you would expect a little bit of rawness. And I think from what we saw this season, compared to 2021, I think if they were to dump him, they should have done that at the end of last year. Because compared to last year, what we've seen this year is clear progress. Now, you've mentioned the qualifying data. I went a step further and I looked into practice. And I know practice can be really deceptive, but what I've noticed about F1 practice in my years of following it is that when you have young drivers, you can sort of tell when a pace switch is about to flick. It first comes in practice and only then they really learn to deliver it when push comes to shove in qualifying. I think it was very obvious with Max and Daniel Ricciardo, if you remember, at Red Bull. Max started regularly outpacing Dan first in practice, and then that sort of followed into qualifying. And in terms of practice, Tsunoda was ahead of Gasly in, I think, about 15% of practice sessions last year, and now it's around 40%. That, to me, is a pretty big uptick. It's not a no-brainer case. A no-brainer case would be if he was level with Pierre, basically. But also, that car's just not that good. So it's not like he's taking up a great seat from somebody else. I mean, there's also obviously the consideration that they're fluttering to find somebody else to fit the other seat if Gasly goes off to Alpine. So yeah, I like the fact that they're keeping him. And I think, I don't know what it says longer term, but I think he's earned it this year. With pure performance, with the pace, maybe with some of the other stuff, there's definitely a discussion to be had. But with the pure lap time, I think it's there.
Well, that's the key thing with him, isn't it? It's trying to join those dots of the peak performance. It's strange because he's made that step in terms of he's cut out the big mistakes. There are a lot of big mistakes last year. The big mistakes have been cut out. Right. There are other kinds of mistakes that are creeping in. He's the driver who's been mentioned the most in stewards' decisions this year, for example, with 16 of them. So that tells you something. We'll get on a little bit more to that in a minute. It is interesting to look at the performance compared to Gasly, because not only has the AlphaTauri been a bit inconsistent and not brilliant this year, but also the way things have swung between those two has been quite revealing. Tsunoda tends to cope a little bit better when the car's understeering a bit. Zandvoort was quite a good example of that, although the AlphaTauri's been going through a phase where its kind of dynamics changed through a corner and Gasly's been struggling a little bit. So I think there is also a little bit of a divergence between actually what Tsunoda and Gasly thrive with as well. But it's a funny thing with Tsunoda that he's had a few weekends where things have come together quite nicely. Imola was the strong one, probably. He didn't qualify so well because he was a little bit unlucky with the timing. Crossed the line like about a minute before the end of the session in drying conditions. So that wasn't great. The same thing happened to Gasly. But he came through to seventh via the sprint race and the race passed Vettel a couple of times. That was probably his strongest weekend. Azerbaijan was good. Should have finished sixth there without the DRS problem. France, he qualified well in Q3, but he got hit by Ocon on the first lap. So there have been some good weekends, but there's also been some difficult weekends. And like the middle phase of the season has been pretty difficult. He's in quite a long, scoreless run at this sort of stage as well. So it's a very, very mixed bag. And it depends on how you slice and dice it, how generous you want to be in your appraisal of whether he's earned the seat or not.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think it's just a case of join the dots? Can those things be put together? Is it within him to do that? He's still not managing his races very effectively. He's been getting into a vicious circle of tire dig in the race, or he'll have an untidy lap at the crucial time around the pit stops, or he'll have an off on the out lap like in Canada. And these things should be coming together. There should be signs that they're coming together more consistently. His collision with Gasly at Silverstone was a bit of a no-no, but it was just a reflection of that frustration and anger that that does come through. You know, that and the reprimands for the yellow flag infringements, they're all signs that, you know, he's trying hard, but it's not being directed, and it's down to him. I mean, yes, you can be coached, and yes, you've been guided, but it's still ultimately down to him to recognize and understand that and work on those things, and then hopefully the access to his talent can just be intuitive, and while he attends to those things, because they're the things that are going to make or break whether he has a long-term F1 career or not.
Yeah, I think there's clearly some sort of, I don't know if it's a workflow problem or a communication problem or something of the sort, but obviously the five reprimands were very indicative, and I think the various verdicts for those reprimands. AlphaTauri wasn't usually the side blamed, if I recall correctly. At least there were a couple of cases where the stewards were specifically like, the team told him, and he didn't do it, and he didn't acquiesce. That's weird. And ultimately, you'd think in a year and a half of F1, however raw you are of a product coming in, that should be worked on and that should be resolved. And yeah, I mean, clearly, I think that more than anything is also my question mark. Whether he can really put it all together. And all together doesn't just mean blistering one lap pace in 50% of the weekends. That's a lot. That's not nothing. Already, if you're a reasonably quick driver in F1, and again, the AlphaTauri is not that great a car, so it's not like he's taking up somebody else's place. And he can put that car where it belongs, I think, more often than not. But because you're part of the Red Bull program, obviously the expectations are higher. I know there's been this long-term chatter of AlphaTauri becoming its own separate thing, a longer-term home, but the fact that we see Pierre Gasly seeking a move to Alpine clearly shows that he doesn't really believe it, and I don't think any of us do either. And when it comes to the longer-term future of Tsunoda, assuming like Honda doesn't come in and take over that team or whatever, assuming that doesn't happen, the longer-term future of Tsunoda is, I don't know how it really works in Red Bull. I'd like to know whether Red Bull's already seen enough to where they're like, yeah, he's not going to be in our main team. Because obviously, AlphaTauri, and we've seen this in the press release again, AlphaTauri team boss Franz Tost always says it takes 3 years to see if a driver has F1 potential. That's a favorite, really favorite saying of his, I think. But Red Bull does not operate that way. That is abundantly clear. No driver that it's given 3 years to in AlphaTauri or Toro Rosso has been then picked for the main team. None of them. Usually, they've been disposed of. And not really sure it's going to be different here, because ultimately Red Bull's policy, whole policy, I think, is we throw you in at the deep end and you better swim, because if you do not swim, then you will not swim in our main team.
Yeah, and certainly I don't think you can make any kind of case at the moment that there's a trajectory that gets him to the Red Bull main team. That pathway is still open. He could get onto that trajectory. It's possible. But right now, it's much more the question of whether he's worth persevering with AlphaTauri, whether he's doing a job there. Not really the argument about Red Bull, but those doors could open if he brings it together. But yeah, it is frustrating him, because he does sometimes have races where he's just baffled at the end of them. Like Hungary, he said, oh, I don't know what was wrong. I think Austria was another one, and it's just down to the tyre use and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit worrying when sometimes there's a problem with that and he's not saying, oh, well, yeah, the tyre management didn't go quite as hoped and that's why I struggled, and then try and understand it. But it's almost this feeling where he doesn't notice what the problem is straight after the race, which is slightly concerning about identifying where the issues are coming from.
You have to wonder whether more years in F2 would have helped with that. But again, that's just not how Red Bull operates. And it's, I don't know. I don't think we're really having like a particularly serious argument about whether or not it did him a disservice by promoting him early. I don't think so, because again, that's just how Red Bull does things. That's how it finds out what it wants to know. You sink or you swim, and that's it. And Tsunoda's clinging onto the life raft, let's say, yes. So I agree that we have to be mindful of the cultural thing, not just of the, I imagine there's a bit of a language barrier going on, because I don't think Yuki has found, like, he's presumably working entirely in English, right? it will not come as easy to him as to someone like Pierre, who has spent his whole life on this European scene. Like, I interviewed Pierre in English in 2013. Like, Yuki Tsunoda has not been working primarily in English for that many years. So that's going to be part of it. So I think I would make concessions for that if I were a team boss, but I'm not.
Yeah, I think you have to allow all of that context to play out. It's funny. I think he'd probably been better off staying in F2, because I always think there's a benefit in a driver completing each level, if you see what I mean. Lewis Hamilton's the great example of this. He always wanted to move on, but it's like, no, you'll do a second year in Formula Renault and you will win the title. You'll do a second year in Formula 3, you will win the title, which he did. Then he only needed 1 year in GP2. Anyway, Tsunoda argues that he's better off having moved into F1 because he learned so much last year, but I think he'd then come into Formula 1 a different driver, but obviously that ship has sailed in terms of his development. But Mark, I just wanted to throw at you something Franz Tost said recently. He said that Tsunoda has just to get under control his emotions and must be more disciplined. How big a weakness do you think that is for him?
That is a weakness, as well as what touching on before, really, and it's what only he can really address. Because that's all energy that's going in the wrong direction, and it's all taken away from where the focus needs to be. And it's definitely there. You hear it sometimes on the radio. Sometimes it's frustration, I think, rather than anger. But it's frustration. It's that it's just spinning his wheels, and it's getting you into trouble. It's getting you into scrappy situations on the track, and it's getting you, you know, energy consuming things, going up to see race control to explain yourself, and grid penalties and things like, you know, these are all. They're not really, they shouldn't be rookie problems. You should be able to have enough control over yourself and enough focus that you can attend to that. And I'm a little bit surprised that, you know, coming up to completing his second year, that these things are there. I can understand the frustration, and absolutely, but that they're coming through so frequently. I do think Franz has got a point. It's something that he needs to eradicate.
Yeah, and that's my big question. Can he actually do that? Because we're seeing a little bit of improvement, but nowhere near enough. And it does have knock-on effects. Zandvoort's a good example, because obviously Tsunoda reported that what he thought was a loose wheel. Then they had all that farrago going on with not being sure about what was going on. And yeah, it took them a while to diagnose the problem. But Tsunoda did suggest a couple of times over the radio that he felt it was then therefore a diff problem, but the team couldn't really, or either could not or would not entirely take that on board. And I asked Tsunoda about that at the next race, and he said, yeah, there's definitely things we could both do better in terms of the communication, but it also means there's this mindset on the pit wall that, well, actually, is this Yuki being objective and giving us what we need, or is it something else clouding it? And you can take that right the way back to when he first tested for AlphaTauri Abu Dhabi at the end of 2020. And his radio comms certainly made quite a big impression on AlphaTauri in terms of the way he was communicating. They really had to calm him down as well. So that trait has been there all the way through in one way, shape or form.
You can't get away with it if you're performing at a very high level. I mean, we've seen obvious examples of that in F1. What was it? How did Toto Wolff phrase it recently? We're there to be the vomit bag for the driver, I think, or something like that. You can get away with it if you're delivering. But if you're not delivering, then that's a very easy thing to latch onto as a potential cause. I'm not saying it's incorrect. I'm not saying it's like an incorrect conclusion. Obviously, keeping your cool is clearly very valuable. Maybe it's more valuable to some than others. But it's, if we're seeing an erratic driver, this might be a key. It really might be a key. So it's something he needs to stamp out. Just also because that's the kind of thing that can make a difference between you being ditched or not. Do people like working with you? It's simple as that. You know, F1's a performance sport, but it's also those margins. I think a lot of people maybe don't realize how important they can be, even sometimes not more so than the pure lap time, but like a close second.
Yeah, it's difficult to separate the cause and effect there ultimately, isn't it? But what is clearly the case, it does cloud the issue a little bit. obviously Franz Tost's got a certain way he likes things to be done. He's tried to take Tsunoda under his wing a little bit. Obviously, Tsunoda has moved to the to nearby the AlphaTauri factory in Italy, so he's putting a big effort in. He's upped his effort level in terms of training, etc. He quite freely admits he hates doing the training. He's not going to be the only F1 driver who does that. Some of them do relish it, but some of them only do it out of necessity. It's just Tsunoda's the only one who will admit it. And maybe sometimes Yuki is a little bit too willing to be honest about stuff when he perhaps shouldn't be. The great examples when they re-signed him for this year. Last year he said, oh, I wouldn't have done. I was surprised by that. Don't say that.
I mean, or do say that. Isn't that what all of us want? Like, I think it's maybe part of our duty even to sort of to commend drivers for saying that, because we don't want there to be this PR sheen of no negativity on anything. Like, if you've not done a very good job, you admitting that endears you to all of us, and honestly, it should endear you to Red Bull and Toro Rosso. I don't know if AlphaTauri. I don't know if it does, but I hope so, because we want that. That's part of it.
Oh, I definitely encourage it, but perhaps it reflects a certain skill that he might need to evolve just a Absolutely. Little bit to help him out. But I think we all agree there is a driver in there. The raw material is there. He can turn good lap times. He can produce good races. He can make good decisions in races, but he can also not do all of those things, which is the big question mark for him. And this opportunity he's been afforded means, I think, yes, in the third year, he's got to take another step and bring it all together. Okay, Franz Tost is the kind of character who, you know, there's most sergeant majors would probably need to be more disciplined in the estimation of Franz Tost, because he's that kind of person. But he is absolutely on the money with this, and probably learning what he can from Tost will be key to Tsunoda making that step.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We'll get back to the pod in a moment, but first, a word about our partner, Grammarly. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done, and Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. I know from experience that Grammarly can help you save time on any writing task and ensure you feel confident about what you've produced. In fact, 96% of Grammarly's users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing, and their tone suggestions can help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done. Well, let's look a little bit beyond Tsunoda, Val, because as we said earlier, you're a keen follower of the junior ranks. You've got a good understanding of the potential alternatives that there were to Tsunoda. So was there a case to be made for one of Red Bull's many driver program prospects to be put into this seat? Or even was there an alternative option out there they should have considered?
Yeah, in short, no. No to both. We're not going to cut the segment there, but we could really, because I think that sums it up. I think that the simplest answer and the simplest way to put it is, no Red Bull Junior has managed an F2 season anywhere near as good as what Tsunoda did in 2020. They've not really even been like in the same solar system as Tsunoda's 2020. On Twitter, you see people making a case for Liam Lawson, and I think that case would have been stronger last year than it is this year. Yuri Vips, even without the obvious thing, the racial slur controversy, has not done enough. Johan de Ruvala has not done enough. Dennis Hauger so far has not done enough. And this season, honestly, I would not be surprised if he's hanging on by a thread in that campaign because it's not been a good season. The only person who has done enough to bolster their reputation within Red Bull this season is another Japanese prospect, Ayumu Asa, who has had a really good rookie season that is nevertheless not as good as the rookie season Yuki Tsunoda had in 2020. So I think longer term, Iwase is probably a big threat. I think next year, he's going to be one of the main drivers, if not the main driver to watch in F2. And the potential, the raw potential is there. If you look at their career paths, you sort of, he's basically walking in Tsunoda's shoes. It's a very, very similar kind of progression and a very, very similar kind of obvious raw talent. So he's the guy Tsunoda has to be afraid of, I think. Red Bull, this is interesting to note, just Red Bull shed Jack Doohan a couple of years ago. They shed him last year. They demoted him to from a full-on Red Bull Junior to a Red Bull-affiliated, Red Bull-supported driver last year, and he finished second in F3 to another Red Bull-affiliated driver in Hauger. So Hauger got full Red Bull Junior status and hasn't done much with it this season. And Doohan went to Alpine. And now there's this whole talk about, you know, because Doohan's had a great season in F2, so Alpine might now see him as the heir apparent to the Piastri thing that never happened. Would the situation be different if Jack Doohan did this season in Red Bull colors? Yes, I think so. Yes. I'm not sure that would be merited. I'm not sure right now Yuki Tsunoda would have deserved to be replaced by Jack Doohan, but I am sure that Red Bull likes new shiny things. So I think it's entirely possible that if you take away all the ghastly Alpine situation that might free up another seat, it's entirely possible that then Tsunoda might have been shelved. But it's really hard to say.
Well, what do you make of the Red Bull Junior scheme? They've got seven drivers parked in F2 and F3. So there's plenty with opportunities there. The fact that you can't really make a case for any of them is slightly worrying, isn't it, for that scheme in terms of who it's been choosing and how it's been nurturing them. And obviously there's all sorts of question marks about how well Red Bull does manage the drivers it's got and develop them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. It affords them this fantastic opportunity, doesn't it? You get on that scheme and yeah, you know, the sky's the limit, and it's pretty much down to you, really. And the way that individuals develop is different in each individual, isn't it? And sometimes their early form will be flattered because they've got so much else of their own personal package together, and they're performing at their own close to their own peak earlier than another guy who might not have looked anything special, but is more, you know, has more things to put together and is more complex and has all sorts of other issues to before he can access everything of his self, and so he looks a bit of a late developer in comparison. It's no real telling. It's not, I don't think it's a science. It's not, and it's certainly not treated as such. They're just treated as light bulbs almost, which is not helpful sometimes. But it's also, you know, a lot of these guys would have had, their careers would have stalled, would have had no career at all. But they get on the Red Bull scheme and then they get to a certain level and then they're taken off the Red Bull scheme. But they usually end up doing something, and even if it's not in Formula One, so it's easy to be critical of how ruthless it is. But I think you know, it's also a whole big scheme of opportunity that wasn't there. So I'd be reluctant to be too critical of it.
Yeah, I think Mark makes two good points there. Firstly, that the Red Bull scheme offers an influx of drivers who, even if they end up not being F1 caliber, they tend to stick around and get good gigs. And that's good. And we should be thankful for that. And two, that it's clearly a very inexact science on how they'll progress, which I think is well evidenced by the revelation this weekend that Red Bull had an option on Oscar Piastri when Oscar Piastri drove for Arden, which is the Horner family team, in F4, I believe. also maybe in Renault 2.0. Doesn't matter. In any case, they didn't take up that option. But it was fairly clear to see why, because on those early levels, Oscar Piastri was not the Oscar Piastri we know right now. But as the cars got more powerful, Oscar Piastri just got a lot better. And he got so good that we've had two teams in an extremely public and costly tug of war over him right now, and one team offering him an immediate two-year deal. So you never know. But at the same time, I will caveat that all by saying the fact that Red Bull is now seemingly turning to Nyck de Vries, the flavor of the month, who has been around this whole time, and what Red Bull has now suddenly found out, apart from the fact that he's done one good race in F1 at Monza, was that really the doubt? Did their image of him suddenly change? That just sort of hints to me at a very scattershot recruitment strategy that I don't think needs to be in place. It makes more sense for Alpine to be interested in de Vries, because Alpine has just had two of its preferred drivers snatched away. But with Red Bull, it just smacks to me like a lack of preparation and a chasing of the flavor of the month, which is also what I felt about the Colton Herta chase, which was a non-starter to begin with because he couldn't get the super license, which is something you think you would have known going into it.
Yeah, I think they felt they could bully their way to getting the super license sorted out. It's a bit unfortunate because I think Colton Herta does merit a super license. He's certainly shown he's good enough and competent enough to come into F1, but that's a different story. But Mark, that almost trade that looks like it should happen with Gasly going to Alpine and de Vries perhaps taking the AlphaTauri drive. If you're AlphaTauri, do you think that's a good trade for them?
Under the circumstances, I guess so, because Gasly doesn't really want to be there. He feels he needs to fly the Red Bull nest, and he's right about that because he's never going to get back into the senior team. But Gasly's he's considerably further on in his development than de Vries. We're talking about a Grand Prix winner, don't forget, against a rookie one who made an extremely impressive debut at Monza, but let's not get carried away. It'll be a different set of strengths and weaknesses they've got. I don't think they're automatically going to get an upgrade or even initial equality. So it's not an automatic step forward on the driver lineup, but there's a lot more potential to be got coming up with a decent car than there is in swapping drivers around. So that's the first order of business. They wanted Herta, of course, not only because he's shown himself to be a driver of considerable promise, but also marketing reasons in the US for the Red Bull brand. And I think it's a shame that's not happened. It is always within the FIA's remit to make exceptions. It's down to their discretion. But I don't think the Red Bull group at the moment is in the good books with the FIA in terms of the Porsche deal has fallen over after FIA and Form have spent years trying to induce them in. So just straight on the back of that falling over, they then say, "Can you make an exception? Do us a favor." And the answer is unsurprisingly no. And so Herta's sort of got caught up in that really. It's created this likely opportunity for de Vries, and I'm sure he'll grab it with both hands. But Pierre Gasly's, he's had a quiet season because of the car, but he's let's not forget, he's a very, very capable Grand Prix driver.
It's not a performance benefiting swap for AlphaTauri, but it's probably, you don't want Gasly to grow unhappy there. That is a consideration also. So if you can send him to Alpine, maybe earn some extra money, that's probably worth it. Just the part that I don't understand, and this name was going to be, can I spoil this, Ed? This was going to be the original topic of the podcast, this name before the Tsunoda news came out. I don't really understand why the AlphaTauri Mick Schumacher idea died a quick death immediately after coming out. And I don't understand it specifically in the context of Nyck de Vries, who is 4 years older than Mick Schumacher. 4 years older, with also an F2 champion, with 2 years fewer of F1 experience. Okay, maybe ceiling higher, probably. I don't know. But I don't really get it. I don't really understand the long-term plan unless they've seen so much from de Vries at Monza that they've seen a long-term successor to Perez in the main team. But I don't think that's a judgment you can make in one race. against Nicholas Latifi. And I don't think, I don't like, again, if I were in charge of AlphaTauri, and I think all the people at Fans are very happy that I'm not, but if I were in charge of AlphaTauri, Mick Schumacher would be my first call immediately as soon as I found out that Gasly wanted to leave, with the caveat that maybe there is some off-track stuff there that is conditioning teams' interest in Mick Schumacher.
Yeah, Schumacher certainly comes with a profile, and that has some repercussions in terms of the German media in particular. But it's a funny situation, the whole Red Bull thing, because they, for a few years now, it's almost seemed quite capricious. You can go all the way back to when they ran out of drivers and started giving people like Brendan Hartley a call, having dropped him many, many years ago. And it does seem odd for me with De Vries, given how much, if we look at Helmut Marko specifically, he follows F2, F3, World Series back when that was functioning very, very closely. So he will have had a very clearly formed opinion of Nick De Vries. And normally, Marko, once he's formed an opinion, he's not, certainly once he's formed a negative opinion, it's pretty unlikely to turn into a positive one. Yeah, you could argue that he was a McLaren driver for a very long time, so he was off limits. But it would strike me as strange if suddenly what De Vries did at Monza completely transformed Red Bull's perception of it, but it seems to have done.
Is that a lesson learned of Alex Albon 2019? The driver brought back into the fold and who widely exceeded expectations upon arrival? Maybe. Yeah, I think so. I think it is. I genuinely think it is, but that doesn't mean I get it. Let's just put it that way.
And it comes back to exactly what AlphaTauri's there for, doesn't it, Mark? Because it is the poor relation at Red Bull. It is the second team. They've tried to position it as a sister team, but it just isn't, is it? Because Red Bull is always going to put the big investment into Red Bull Racing. If AlphaTauri was equal status, they'd be spending just as much money on it over the years. So it is the second team, just by definition. So there almost seems to be this sort of constant shift in terms of exactly what they think they're doing with drivers, whether it's for the next big thing or whether it's just to have a few drivers ticking over for a few years, or even to occasionally, as they're now considering doing, bring in an outsider to plug in.
Yeah, there's an implicit assumption there that AlphaTauri is never going to be a regular front-running team, isn't there? Because otherwise you'd be looking for the next big star to put in and plant in that team, not just to grow them for the as a nursery for the big team. You'd be looking to progress the team and driver together to become contenders in your own right. And I don't think that that's there. And the way that the resources are spread between the two entities, it pretty much ensures that that's not going to be the case. So, yeah, by definition, it's the nursery team. And so, by definition, if you get an outstanding driver, truly outstanding driver in there, he's not going to be there for very long. And we've seen that already. And if you happen to have a very good driver and a good driver alongside him, like they had in 2015 with Carlos Sainz and Verstappen, that also leads to problems, because it means one gets the automatic promotion and the other one, who in any normal year would have been promoted, is feels stuck, and Gasly's found himself in the Sainz situation, hasn't he? So yeah, it's difficult to work out what the happy medium is, given the scope of the team's ambitions.
You'd have to say that period when they did have Gasly post Red Bull and the car was good, so the past couple of years, almost the sweet spot, because Gasly was in many ways the ideal lead driver for a team of that nature. They knew how to get the best out of him. He fitted in well there. He probably knew that it was a long shot to ever get back into Red Bull, but he was a driver who was motivated to show he could do well, showed the mental fortitude to bounce back. He didn't seem to take the hit that, say, Daniel Kvyat did when he was dropped, in that Gasly just dropped it in the middle of 2019 and he was performing very well over the second half of that season and then into 2021. And then this year has been difficult, but he's still, in fits and starts, performing pretty well. So almost a golden era for AlphaTauri, you could say, with Gasly. But then it comes, yeah, what do they do next?
Because it can't last. There's like an almost a self-destruct mechanism built in. If your driver's doing too well, then very soon he'll stop being content with a place in AlphaTauri. And, you know, the same happened with Sainz. Sainz was doing really well at Toro Rosso after Verstappen's departure. Sainz was beating Daniel Kvyat on the regular very convincingly. But when you have a driver who's performing on that level consistently, that driver will want to be elsewhere sooner rather than later. We've seen it with Science, and we're now seeing it with Pierre Gasly.
Yeah, well, Science pretty much engineered his own departure, didn't he, to get that loan deal to Renault, which has set him on a path to Ferrari. So that's worked for him ultimately. But yeah, Gasly's a driver entering, in Formula One terms, middle-aged. He's the grand old age of 27. He turns, I think, February next year. So that's getting into the main stretch of his F1 career. And he said in the past that probably the next move he makes is almost the key one for him. So probably a good time for it to happen. It remains to be seen 100% whether it all happens. De Vries did test for Alpine this week, so they were having a look at him, but also it's in their interest to help AlphaTauri take De Vries, so perhaps there may have been some assistance to them in terms of judging how De Vries was performing as well that will free up Gasly. So we'll expect to hear a little bit more on that fairly soon.
What a world, right? What a world. Milton Keynes and Enstone, best of friends.
They're collaborating, and then that'll allow Alpine to say, look, here's Pierre Gasly. He was our first choice all along, even though he's about 38th choice once they've failed with Alonso and Piastri. It's been quite the driver market this year, that's for sure. Well, thanks very much to Mark and Val for your insight. For more of that, head to therace.com and don't forget the hyphen, as there's loads to read there. Make sure you download our new app as well. Just search for The Race Media and download it so you can read what you want when you want. And also check out our other podcasts, including The Race IndyCar podcast and our MotoGP podcast. Val is often on the MotoGP pod, so if you'd like a little bit more of him, head there. Also, take a look at our YouTube channel. If you enjoy listening to this podcast and feel so inclined, a review of the Race F1 podcast on your platform of choice would be much appreciated, as it really does help us. Well, there's likely to be more news on the F1 driver market in the near future, so stay with us for everything you need to know from the world of F1.
The Athletic.